Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm a wargaming analyst at DSTL, and alongside my colleague Mary, we're going to do a presentation on climate security wargaming. I'm going to focus on an educational climate game that we designed called Ripple Effect, and then Mary's going to cover some of the more analytical wargaming that we do. So, without further ado, next slide, please. Thank you. So, at the beginning of 2024, DSTL was commissioned by the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Climate Security to design and run an experiential strategic war game. And what we were asked was to bring climate security issues to life on an illustrative basis to challenge the thinking of the APPG membership, and the membership being academics, peers, members of parliament, people like that. So to do that, various actors, they wanted us to show how various actors may act or react to changes in the security dynamic, and how UK equities may be challenged by that. This is consistent with the Strategic Defence Review 2025, which stated that climate change and environmental degradation is creating new geographical realities and competition for resources, driving immigration, instability, and more frequent humanitarian disasters, and demanding military adaptation for operations in more extreme weather conditions. So, why did we pick water security as the topic of our educational game? Well, we chose it for its intuitiveness and wide relevance. According to the United Nations, there are over 150 countries that have territory with at least one transboundary water body, and yet most of these do not have defined water allocations covered by cooperation agreements. This means that there's often no formal mechanism in place for the equitable and reasonable use of shared freshwater resources. And the development and implementation of water agreements and other cooperative arrangements will likely become more difficult and more important over time as climate change and as well as economic and population growth put more pressure on the environment and freshwater resources. So use cases. So since we delivered it to the APPG, we've also delivered the game to the Armed Forces Parliamentary Scheme, the Anglo-Netherlands, Norwegian plus Sweden Working Group, and in October, I'll be taking it to the NATO Climate Change and Security Centre of Excellence in Canada, where we'll be delivering a roundtable session on wargaming and as a learning and decision-making tool. Next slide, please. So, what is Ripple Effect? Ripple Effect is a climate change strategic war game that explores a fictional region and scenario where the breakdown of a transboundary water agreement threatens to undermine the domestic and international security and stability of the region. You play as one of five actors who can compete or cooperate to try and resolve the situation. So there are three kind of main elements to the scenario. First one being the breakdown of a colonial era water sharing agreement, where the upstream country reduces water flow to the downstream country from a 60-40 split to a 75-25 split. The second element is within the downstream country, the Kingdom of Moab. There is a farmer-herder conflict that has been brewing for decades and is threatening to spill out once again. And the third element is the deployment of an international military force into a climate-stressed region, and that's the global peacekeeping force in the game being deployed to the capital city called Sola. So, why are we covering each element? Well, water security I've already covered. Farmer-herder conflict, that's to look at the aridification of the land, which means that the farmers' agricultural productivity and crop yields are declining and that the herders' grazing pastures are shrinking. And so within the game, there are various ways that they could mitigate this. For example, they can expand into marginal unoccupied land, like the Chilock Hills and Tibble Marshes. They can expand into their counterparts' land, or they could improve the quality of their existing land. And so within the game, they have various options and strategies that they can pursue to meet their needs. While it is based on while it is a fictional region, it is based on real-world case studies. So we did a literature review and looked at various case studies from around Africa, from the Middle East, and from Asia, as well as the continental United States. So there's a kind of a big body of work that went into looking at how the water cooperation or competition dynamics, whether they're universal across different regions or if they're specific to particular regions. So I can go into more of that in the Q&A if you're interested. In terms of the turn structure, there's five phases per turn. So the strategize, where you familiarize yourself with the material, you think amongst yourselves as to like what do you want to do going forward in this turn or future turns. There's a discussion phase, where you engage in free negotiations with other players. This provides players with the opportunity to articulate their perspectives, react to the emerging narrative, and state which actions they would oppose or support and why. There's the act phase, where they commit their actions via action cubes in secret. There's a resolve phase, where the facilitator adjudicates the outcome of player actions and translates them into in-game effects and narrative. There's an events phase, which I will cover on a later slide. And I think the thing that I'd emphasise here is that within the game as a whole, it emphasises continuity and recovery over victory. So there's no victory conditions or win state. The game doesn't actually end, so to speak. You kind of draw the game to a conclusion when you feel as if the participants have got engagement or learning outcomes out of it. So it's quite good in terms of if you've got an hour with someone or 2 hours or 3 hours, you can kind of cater to the audience in that way. And the other thing is that at the end of each game, we encourage that there's a debrief where you focus on feedback and iterative learning. And if there's enough time, we also encourage the players to take on new roles or play as a different player within the game so that they can understand the climate situation from different perspectives. Next slide, please. So, the research and real-world case studies showed us that in order to accurately reflect those affected by climate change and the key actors in managing climate security issues, the game needed to asymmetrically represent actors at the sub, national and supranational levels. So the finalised scenario consists of two nation states, a semi-nomadic herder group, a farming group and the peacekeeping force. The actor dynamics were designed by mapping out their relationships in a cell matrix. This allowed us to create conditions where each actor has plausible reasons to both compete and cooperate with every other actor, thereby providing players with the agency to interact and form relationships however they wish. While actors are able to discuss and negotiate across all levels, there are also constraints to varying extents by which actions and resources are available to them. This is done to emphasise the complex power imbalances that exist between different actor types and at different actor levels. For example, as the peacekeeping force are in the downstream country by host invitation, any proposed action by that force to either increase the presence of or the remit of that force has to be agreed with the host nation first. So even though the peacekeeping force may look like a very powerful entity, they are still constrained by what the host nation has to say about things. Next slide, please. So actions are adjudicated in the following order. So you do climate actions are adjudicated first, followed by diplomatic, then economic, finally security actions. The climate actions predominantly focus on reducing the demand of or increasing the supply of land and water. And this closely ties into the concepts of climate adaptation, mitigation and resilience. There are diplomatic actions which focus on the political influence at both the top-down and bottom-up level. There are economic actions which focus on punitive and persuasive financial measures. And finally, there are security actions which focus on preventing or responding to instability. Participants are asked by the facilitator to discuss the potential reasons for why actions may fail or succeed. So upon the adjudication, you basically state which actions are you taking, and the facilitator goes, why are you taking them, what do you hope to achieve out of that action, what might go wrong with that action, et cetera, just to flesh out the discussion point and to have those kind of countervailing perspectives. Next slide, please. So, at the end of the turn, the facilitator may choose to add one or more events into the game. These events have a mechanical effect, whether that be changes to the landmarkers, the resources, or the trackers. There are multiple reasons why a facilitator may choose to do this. So that could be to rebalance the relative power of players. For instance, if one country is dominating to such an extent that it's creating negative learning outcomes, we have kind of a mechanic where you can draw them back towards the middle point if we think it is in the greater game's benefit. Also to bring attention to a particular issue. So for instance, if they're not focusing on climate action enough and they're going down a purely diplomatic or military route, we have injects in place that can force them to reconsider whether that is in their best interests. And finally, to highlight second and third order effects of their decisions. Whereas previous versions of the game used pre-scripted injects, we now provide more adaptability and flexibility to the facilitator via an event guide. This is essentially a list of 24 different injects which they can choose from, describing each event, the affected actors, and suggestions on when they should be used. One benefit of this system is that it allows us to consider how decision makers and players respond to both long-term environmental changes, i.e. the broader scenario, as well as more kind of immediate short-term environmental, political, and social events. Next slide, please. Thank you. This is a kind of my final slide, but I'd like to kind of conclude by going through some recurrent gameplay themes. And I will stress here that as this is an educational game, this should not be interpreted as like insights or observations. They're just things that I've noticed have come out of the game and might be interesting. So the root causes and drivers of the conflict, i.e. climate change and the colonial legacies that we mentioned throughout, are often overlooked in favour of more immediate economic, military or political explanations. For example, in the scenario, it states that the arbitrary borders that were divided the countries unevenly and disregarded cultural, ethno-religious and geographic realities on the ground. And so if in the game, for instance, there is immigration from one country to the other, the Republic of Kallus, the upstream country, often perceives this migration as an immediate security threat, but they don't necessarily comment or reflect on the fact that people are feeling that need to migrate is driven by climate change or the colonial history of the region. Second point is that there's a relatively even balance between those who act cooperatively versus competitively at the start of the game. This is quite interesting because academic research into the relationship between the two over freshwater resources has found that the prevailing response from states is to act cooperatively. However, the amount and type of this cooperation depends on a range of factors, including the region's geography, interstate relations, and the level of water scarcity. And it's also important to note that the relationship can differ at the local scale, and this is because at the local scale, this is where the effects of water scarcity are felt most acutely. With that, all that said, I'll give the shameless plug of saying that the game is available in room 111 of the Games Fair this afternoon. If you'd like to play it, we've got two games that we can run simultaneously, so we can get about 10 to up to 20 players playing it all at the same time. And with that said, I will pass it over to my colleague Mary. Thank you.
The next part of the presentation will detail a different type of climate wargaming within DSTL. Unlike the previous game that Andrew just went through, this wargaming series is an analytical game. It's set within the real world and is used alongside other work to create future policies or advise the creation of them. The wargame series began from a paper commissioned by SONAC, the Secretary of State Office for Net Assessment and Challenge, and CEE, the Climate, Energy and Environment Directorate, which looked into how climate change will affect grid power competition. This was expanded into a wargame that DSTL was commissioned to make to test this idea in a more dynamic way to see more closely how the different nations would interact. The game allows us to see how climate change will change strategic advantage in these regions and change the levers of influence and how many nations may gain from these changes. Though climate change affected countries do not always have an immediate security threat to the UK, they may present opportunities for our adversaries. The first war game was set within Africa, and then the next one, Southeast Asia and Oceania, and then our most recent one that is coming up is Europe and the High North, just at the bottom. We have tested different regions within each game in the series, so we can study the similarities and differences in how climate change and great power competition will manifest themselves in the region. Each war game has fed into the lessons learned, so we've been able to streamline the process in creating them and the materials and develop a network of relevant SMEs. After the final war game is delivered in January, we will compare the outputs for each of the games and analyse for similarities and differences and gaps within current legislature. This will then be taken to a policy workshop with our stakeholders and customers and other interested parties. This will then be fed into a senior exploitation event. Thank you. To create the actual material for the war game, as I mentioned, we kind of refined the process throughout. So the first game took the longest to create, and I'll kind of explain the process for the final game, because that's the one that hopefully is the best. So we first began by researching the new region, looking into political events to monitor and consider for the future history, as well as how climate change would affect the region. It's very important, we felt, to set aside time for the team to just be given the ability to go away and purely research and become familiar with the different regions. Not everyone just has a general knowledge of the whole globe. As part of this research, we also began the process of engaging with internal and external SMEs. In particular, the external SMEs we used were from the Met Office, the FCDO, the Government Office for Science and Defence Intelligence. So we tried to cover quite a range. These were incredibly useful, especially during our scenario and future history workshop, where they gave us feedback on the first draft of material and suggested areas that we'd neglected. We were very fortunate in particular that the Met Office were so happy to work alongside us. Their contribution was truly invaluable. They reviewed all our main material, attended our inject workshop, and helped create and refine key injects for the game, which would focus not just on climatic events, but also the second and third order effects of these events. They also worked alongside us to create weather projections for the whole game based on their research. And for the High North, they used this research to create sea ice projections for during the whole game also. They also came to all of our play tests. They were pretty good. The Met Office were an ideal balance to ensure that the climate events of the game remained at the centre. And this collaboration with the SMEs has given us, hopefully, a scientifically rigorous game. I'll just go over some of the key mechanics of the game. Now I've kind of explained the process of writing the materials. So the players are often SMEs, so desk officers who work in this area, defence and intelligence reps, attendees from the various nations' versions of the Ministry of Defence or Foreign Office. So therefore the game is mainly structured around the discussions the players have within these cells and with each other. And as a result, the mechanics are fairly straightforward to try and minimise any confusion. Often a lot of the people who are involved have never wargamed before, so we try and kind of strip it back slightly. The players discuss actions they take and then commit to them through using their resource cubes. These are based on economic projections where possible and can fluctuate throughout the game depending on events within the game. We have an action list which players can use as a handrail, and this is usually used most by people who've never wargamed previously in the first turn, but after that people kind of get the hang of things and then create actions based on their own experience. There's also the agreement sheet just at the top there, where actors can detail agreements they've entered with other players and commit effort to these. This was created after the first game, after it was realised a lot of actors were working in collaboration with each other, so this was just a better way to record that. Adjudication is then run by SMEs on the area who decide with a dice roll how successful actions would be, and the dice roll is used to simulate the likelihood of success. Another couple of key elements of the mechanics is the use of injects in the weather projections. So the injects used have a mechanical effect, and we have a mixture of the prescription injects that I mentioned we make alongside with the Met Office, and we also have the ability for the white cell to script some on the day if there's something that happens that the field requires that. These injects can be used to recenter the main theme of climate change and to highlight the second and third order effects of climate change. The format is similar to that used in Ripple Effect, in part because I made them both. And also, we thought the format was slightly better to make them more memorable and engaging, formatting them more similar to how people experience the news in the real world. The weather projections have also been created by the Met Office and have a mechanical impact on the success of events. There are a few of the main mechanics of the game. Unfortunately, due to classification, I can't go over the outputs, but hopefully this has given you a comprehensive breakdown of how we analytically study climate change at DSTL. And then I'll try and be quick with this one. So to link the work that me and Andrew have been going through to the topic of the session, climate change is an essential part of testing future resilience. For example, how resilient is our national infrastructure, our international networks, etc., when put to the new challenge that climate change will create. Why use wargaming for resilience research? Wargaming is quite unique to other types of research. uniquely, it like forces players to make decisions and engage with the problem in a very different way to other types of like desk-based research. The second and third point, I'll go through quickly because we're running out of time. But through the series of war games, we've revealed a series of vulnerabilities in the environment, but also within our current thinking, the gaps within UK and international law. For example, there is no recognition of a climate refugee. As a result, the international community have not been able to adapt, mitigate, or put structures into place for this eventuality. There's also no concept of citizenship. If your island is sinking, who are you, who are you a citizen of? That's going to be an issue that is going to come up in the future. We also make a lot of assumptions that the operating environment will remain the same. So we currently move at X speed, so we'll move at that speed in the future. What if there's a lot hotter weather? What if it's a lot wetter? Like, things are going to change massively, and we can't keep assuming things will remain the same, as well as like our equipment will not work the same way in like the heat waves that are predicted by the Met Office. Wargaming is a way to reveal these assumptions before we actually have to experience them. Finally, wargaming also allows people to engage with resilience issues that will be created from a different way, in a different way to desk-based research, and also allows us to get multiple disciplines into to attend one event and recognise and talk through issues that we'll all collectively face.